We have a few announcements we'll do first, and then a little brief, just a few words on the declaration. As we all know, most of us that are here, we meet twice a week, on Sundays and on Wednesday evenings for classes. And on our Wednesday night class coming up, we start at 7:45 and we go to 9 p.m. And we're getting the second half of chapter 14, which is the chapter on cycles, which is very interesting. Also on Wednesday evening, the reference library is open from 5:30 to 7:30. For those who don't have books at home, they might want to look at the reference during that time or look up any subject matter they'd like to look at during that time period. They're welcomed. There's always someone there in the library to be of help to you. Then, of course, on Sundays, we either have a talk, a forum, or a panel discussion. And we are now in our April series, which is the more on the hidden side of nature. We are doing today individuality and personality is the title of the talk. Those meetings start promptly at 11. They're over at 12 noon. There's always a time period for individuals for questions or comments after the presentation. And also on Sundays, our doors open at 10:30. The library we've already spoke upon, and there will be other things coming up later in the next month, but we thought we'd hold off on those till we're just in the middle. So we have time yet. Now, as far as the declaration that's on the back of the bulletin, it's a very few paragraphs, but they really give you the basic setup for what any ULT lodge will present, because from their platform is strictly the philosophy of theosophy. Each individual can do what they wish on their own time as far as investigating anything other than that. But here at the lodge, we express primarily the teachings of HPB and William Q. Judge. And the main idea of the teachings is to let us understand and really know within our hearts that the idea of universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. It's just not something that should be lightly said. We're all interconnected. And it's because of that same aim and that teachings that we keep as our basis that keeps each lodge active in its own way. And we are just one of 28 lodges situated throughout this globe. And in each one, we are endeavoring to learn more about our real self, which partly we'll find out today in our discussion, that makes us understand the whole possibility of perfectibility throughout this whole evolutionary time period. And it's open to all. It does have a statement at the end where it says, the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And that, in a way, is a statement of universal brotherhood. So, as was mentioned, the title for today's discussion is Individuality and Personality. Well, we thought we would start off with something which we felt was much more to our knowledge that we know about, is our personality. So we're going to start off talking about the personality, and then we'll go on to individuality. So what do we know of this, quote, personality? We look around the room, we see different faces, we see different colors, we see different ages. But yet we look in the mirror and we go, whoa, this is me. And if we look at the basic teachings that are quite ancient, this physical form is really just a vehicle, an instrument for action. And it is that deeper inner true soul, which is that reincarnating ego. It's the contact with the matter and with this world is through, quote, a personality. That's the vehicle. And it's, if we look at this idea, if we didn't have a personality, would there be any use for a physical body? Would there be any use for a brain? Would there be any use for the outer organs of sight, of hearing and seeing? It's the container of all that. It is the container that on this level and this plane where all action will take place. And it's an action of an action and a reaction for it. So we know that in a way, for most of us who have been studying, that these vehicles are composed of, shall we say, countless lives that are drawn from the elemental planes, lives which are in a way magnets and which are drawn to that, quote, reincarnating ego, which we think this personality is, to the earth. We come back again and again and again and again. And in a way, we can say, people can say, well, that's man's lot. That's one way of speaking for it. Because here in the human state, we are here for the main cause of defects in our nature, not our virtues. So we're looking at something that really is transitory. This personality will be here for this lifetime only in what we're seeing of it. It's impermanent. We know it's ever-changing. It's wants, it's must-haves or needs. It's a constant changing of it. It's not anything that it's permanent. And yet, human life on this plane is where our deeds, shall we say, and our growth is where it has to be. This is the only plane, this physical plane, is where any progress can be made, where we can see cause and effect within us and around us. So if we go with this whole idea that we're not going to end up getting, quote, any punishment from any outside situation or any praise or goodness or rewards other than those that we make for ourselves, because this personality that we're living in right now, we can sort of say part of this personality we've built up on our own. No one else gave it to us. We are what we have earned within lives and lives. And that is why in so many cases it comes up that it is the false reincarnating ego. It's not the personality that it really is. Now, we thought we would bring to mind a little bit of the mind's influence on this brain in this life. Now, as our lower mind, which we will see, there is a duality. Once the thinker enters into matter, there is a duality. And it's our lower mind which retains most, shall we say, of the impressions of this lifetime. And for most, we only really retain memories of this one. The higher ego, which we will speak of later, cannot really act directly on this body. It is unconditionally omnipresent on its own plane, but only potentially in our earth plane. And it tells us that we act solely through it, the quote, alter ego, the personal self. Now, this personal self that we talk about that's just temporary, that's only going to be here for a while, we have to understand that death of the physical body does not mean the death of the personality, because there are other states of experience that it will go through, that of the after-death states, the Kamaloka state, and then the Devakonic state. And here is where experience is either eliminated or assimilated on the life last lived. So this personal man, we have to understand, is constantly going to be here, but we want to ask that question, but who's in command? Who's in command of this lifetime? When we read in the philosophy, sometimes we see the thing, the killing out of the personality. It's not so much the killing out of the personality as it is to break our identification with it and destroy all personal ideas which chain us to it. And it is that personal idea of possession which must be crushed out. So we even talk when we speak of me, mine, and we mistakenly are checking out effects of causes and not understanding these. We're mistaking the effects for causes, and it's through this all regards to them. So there's another part of our nature, and it's a position that we want to try to presume, and that's when we get into this idea of individuality. So what's the difference of an individuality or my personality? So now we'll find out.
Well, the whole keynote to understanding Eastern philosophy is realizing the difference between individuality and personality. So we've heard what the personality is, but the individuality is another name for the higher self, the higher ego. And it is that part in us which is imperishable. It's a ray of the divine. It's immutable. It's omniscient, omnipresent, all-knowing, which is omniscience, on its own plane. And it is, we can say. So we have the higher triad and the lower quaternary of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. As we have spirit, spiritual soul, and we have the mind principle, which is Manas. And that is really our highest contact is with Manas, which is the mind principle. And that is if we've gotten away from the personality and we're not living in our desires and our lower self. So the challenge is to raise the self by the self. And when one realizes that we are all one, that everything is interconnected, every bit of nature, we can start living and inspiring feelings of friendship, generosity, kindness, and love. And then the personality is a tool. We use the personality to raise the self by the self. And theosophy works its magic by first diffusing the explosive tendency towards self-seeking. And we do have this part in us which is explosive. We've seen it, you know, when one flies off the handle, when one blows up into a fit of rage or anger. And we also see it in nature. We see it in the thunderstorms, the tornadoes, great floods. That's part of our universal brotherhood and our interconnectedness. So individuality is immortal, and the personality are like the clothes it wears in any one life. Now, the lower principles, the four lower principles of you know, the body, the astral body, the passions of desires, and prana, which is the life principle, which pervades all the other principles. We can look at that like a shell of the, it's the animal, the vegetable, and the mineral. That's the shell that we contact nature with through the personality. But the individuality is, like we said, omniscient on its own plane. And it is. It's really difficult to say anything more than it is. Because when we get into the higher metaphysics, we realize that, you know, that all is one and all is interconnected, and there's nothing that we can say about it except by negation. We can say what it is not. You know, we're not our thoughts, we're not our bodies, we're not our personalities. They're just the vehicles we use. Like, you know, in one life we could be Hamlet, and another life we could be any one of Shakespeare's myriad characters. We could be Macbeth. And literally, we are all these. We need to use these personalities. They're very important. And we need to incarnate the individuality and raise it up while in this life. It needs to be done. And we've been instructed in how to do this by the divine instructors, the elder brothers that are always working behind the scene. We've been impressed with these ideas when we were infant humanity, but now we're like teenagers in a sense. We're trying our, you know, to assert our independence. But if we've gotten caught up in the passions and desires of the lower and the sensations, seeking a life of sensation, seeking a life of pleasure, seeking a life of power, influence, then we'll find ourselves sidetracked for many lifetimes. And eventually, though, that all becomes meaningless and hollow. And one is either drawn towards the higher or the lower. There's a moment of choice that we're really making every moment, but there comes a time in the distant future where we either go with the light or the dark. We either go on the one path towards that friendship, generosity, kindness, and love, that universal brotherhood, or we work strictly through the passions and desires, but then we are eventually annihilated. I mean, we literally are annihilated and thrown back into great nature. And at that point, you know, we're set back. You still get another chance, but we're set back for that Manvantara, that great period of evolution. We drop out. You know, we've known people who have dropped out of school and they regret it, but it's too late at that point. It's never too late to learn. But so we wanted to to mention too that we need to recollect this knowledge, that this knowledge is something that when we recollect, we literally recollect the knowledge and put it to use through altruism and universal brotherhood, that generosity and love, that compassionate being, which we've seen great examples of in Buddha, Krishna, and Christ, that they are the higher self. They are living in their individuality. They have completely connected and they have severed themselves from the rest of humanity only in the sense that they know better. They see through matter. They have become one with nature, and they're working with all of the laws of nature. So that's it for individuality, and your comments and questions are invited at this time. Yes?
So then when we talk about individuality and personality, it seems it's referring to the dual aspect of man, the spiritual and the terrestrial aspect of man. Our question is, you know, often we hear the term spiritual evolution. And our understanding is that what's the application? Does that apply to the spiritual aspect of man, or does the idea of spiritual evolution apply to the terrestrial personality?
Well, the idea of spiritual evolution, there's more than one type of evolution. We also know there's the physical evolution and the psychic evolution. But this spiritual type of evolution is that which we really are, but we really don't acknowledge it for a normal lifespan as a, quote, personality. So there are more than one type moving along. So in that connection, we have to look at the idea that personality is only one little, shall we say, one little time, one little spark in that whole three periods of evolution. It's only a speck of it. If this main idea of raising up this idea of the individuality, eventually, as was stated for the great sages, there will be no need for, quote, a personality, because the personality and the individuality have become one. Yes, way in the back.
We think that's a very important point about spiritual evolution. That is our opportunity to initiate and lift up those lower lives to a higher position, so that personality is part of the spiritual evolution if we do our job.
Yes.
Seeing for most that come from a Western background, the idea of individuality carries with it what makes us unique and different from another human being. But if we heard correctly, a good deal of our individuality is not universal or unique to us. It's part of all of life. But what about that mind principle? Does that make us uniquely individual and thinker?
Well, the mind principle is, in a sense, our uniqueness. That's it's not based on intellect. The intellect and the reasoning is done through the personality. But whatever we have assimilated to ourselves through many personalities over many lifetimes becomes uniquely ours, in a sense. That would be our unique part of ourself. It's what we have collected, and it's in our storehouse. It's like a breadbasket, in a sense. Yes.
So therefore, our spiritual evolution is determined by that mind principle? Is that part of it?
So our spiritual evolution is determined by the mind principle?
Well, part of that.
Yes, one could say that. In a sense, it's a spiritual evolution of the personality. Spirit itself doesn't evolve. Spirit is. And it's so.
And we could say in connection with that that our character that we see within us, you know, people talk about he has a really good character. You know, what does that mean? Where does that character come from? As was stated, we have a part of our higher nature, that Buddhistic nature, the Buddhi part, which we could call Buddhi Manas, the higher Manas. That is like, as he said, a breadbasket of all the collection and knowledge we have gained from these personalities and lifetimes year after year. It's there to be tapped, but we have to be able to understand who and what we are first and what part of our nature is acting at all times. And then we can tap into that.
And there's the thread soul, the Sutratma, which all the personalities that are successful are like beads, like pearls on a necklace. And those that are failures are cast away. So all the way in the back, in the middle of the bench.
How are you defining spiritual evolution?
Well,
you want it? Go ahead.
That's what we're groping with, for sure. Is there a contribution?
We think actually that it was mentioned by the speaker in the previous response when it was said this, when we talk about spiritual evolution, we're talking about the spiritual evolution of the personality. So the implication there then is that, yes, it's up to the thinker to use the personality in ways that it evolves to be a better vehicle to more fully express the higher principles. Would that be a working definition of spiritual evolution?
Yeah.
Yes, that would be a good definition.
And also think about it. For the personal man, that man on this plane, we have to use a reason to sort of balance stuff out. But that man within us, that I, uses intuitional. It thinks intuitionally. It knows. It doesn't depend on reason. We can see that there is a duality with our mind. We're choosers. We're thinkers. And we're, out of all of the kingdoms, we have that power to choose as thinkers. In the lower nature, they don't have that power to choose. So there's this constant warfare. It's like the Gita, the Krishna within us and the Arjuna within us. There's that constant trying to balance and join together the two.
It's that great struggle with nature. That's what we're struggling with our natures and all of great nature.
Individuality choose the personality? What factors go into the consideration?
Okay. How does the individuality choose the personality? Well, we're making it all the time through karma. And karma is action. It literally means action. It's action and reaction. And for every thought, word, or deed, for every action or inaction, and in the Bhagavad Gita, it's stressed that there is action and inaction, and inaction and action. So it's something that we really need to consider. But it's through karma would be the short answer.
And we are making up, as was stated, as we act in any one lifetime, those magnets that was mentioned earlier, those are the skandhas. There are things that are attached that we have made that in each lifetime, if the situation of what's going to be in that coming lifetime, these will be drawn back to them. So, in other words, it's not so much, well, I want this personality versus that personality. It's in our everyday living, in our every waking life, we are making in any one lifetime decisions that will bring about what life will bring us. Because we've been through so many lifetimes, so many situations. And it's obviously, as said, the defects idea. There's something's out of balance, and that's why we keep coming back.
Yes, and these skandhas that determine our personality, they're electromagnetic. And we're electromagnetic beings, and they're drawn to us. I mean, we get exactly what we deserve at all times. But it's the personality that doesn't want to believe that. And in organized religion, the personality is stressed, and individuality is not even existent, and at least in Christianity. Yes?
You mentioned that the individuality resides in the Atma plane of existence, where the ego is. If we remain on that plane and do not go higher into the Adi plane, where all the individuality is immediate to one, is on the Atma plane, is my individuality or my ego, is it different from yours? And if so, how?
Well, all is one, really. That's the reality.
Not in the Atma plane, not where you said in
the
Atma is
it's metaphysical and it's meta-spiritual, too. It's completely beyond. We can't describe what it is. We can just say it is. It's okay. Words are just become useless when you get up to that.
So when do we differentiate?
When do we differentiate?
Here.
Well, it's right here. It's in the manas, the mind principle, which is either going towards the desires and the passions, or it is going up through that universal love, that friendship, that fellowship.
Is that connection
yes.
with this?
Okay. We think an important thing is to go to the key to theosophy. There are two places where there's a breakdown of a description that helps. When we say Atma Buddhi, we're talking about universal. There is no difference. That's the power. But when we talk about the individuality, we're talking about that power focused in one expression, and that's the mind principle. We are unique, just as we're all using eyes, but we're all seeing something different because we're sitting in a different place. If we bring ourselves up to the point where we are universal, then we see as the Christ or the Buddha or Krishna. So we have to be very careful when we use terms. It sounds like there's Krishna in us and there's the personality in us, and one of them is going to win. No, there's me, the perceiver and the chooser, and I can see the higher and I can see the lower. I decide, and I am a unique individual until I blend that.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if someone could, if not now, afterwards, please show me where in the Secret Doctrine talks about a separate individual. Because from my understanding, the individuality is not a unique entity. You know, once you get to the level of individual, it's one individual. And the part that reincarnates, you know, is not separate for me. Like, my residual desires will get reincarnated as something that's completely separate, and it may mix with yours or yours or yours. So if somebody could later on show me that, I would appreciate that.
There are some references that will explain that in a clearer situation than maybe the way you're seeing it. Yes?
Well, just to tie in with that last comment, but also the idea of spiritual evolution, of course there's a spiritualizing of the personality, but the spiritual evolution of the individuality or the ego or the thinker is something that takes place, of course, many lives. And that part of that immolation is first, spiritual evolution, is first to move to self-conscious realization of one's individuality, and then self-conscious identification with all. And that's described in the proem of the Secret Doctrine on page 16, in the third fundamental. So you got it right there.
Good boy, yes. Right about that. Yeah.
In the back.
Yeah, one of the difficulties is we need to explore both sides of this duality and also remember it is one. It is two aspects of one principle that as was said, as we place our focus, we are thinking, acting, and feeling that way. If we allow ourselves for a moment to consider the real truth that everything is one, they automatically blend because there is no separation. Mm. But that is an ongoing task and effort for our conscious minds. And over time, as was said, the spiritual evolutionary goal is to live in that state of consciousness at all times and to in the process bring up all of life to the point where that's possible for the lower kingdoms to come into that process as well.
Yeah, and it all is one in reality with a capital R, but in that is the subjective plane. On the objective plane, we differentiate and we become dual. But then we have the Atma Buddhi Manas, which is triple, and we have the lower quaternary, which is four, of course. And then we're told that we're septenary beings. So so there's really, which they're all true in their own respect, but yes.
Okay, and then let's take the case of the physician or the coroner who sees nothing but the physical form. No clothes, no trappings, no glasses. All blood, tissue, bone, heartbeat or not, depending on the state it's in. But it sees very clearly these are all the same except for whatever process has taken place within the physical. And then we lost the rest of our thought, but it's the beginning of stripping away what separates us. If we can do that by looking in the eyes of another and saying, much more of us is exactly the same than is different, and practice that, try to cultivate that idea. That separation that we create by our behavior and our thoughts begins to melt.
Well, and isn't that the sin of separateness? When we look at the other, no matter how much of a criminal they are, and we say, you know, I'm not like that. Well, we need to pass through all experience. And we should never judge a book by a cover.
And also we were thinking, too, we can acknowledge for most of us to just see that duality part. There are certain innate ideas that have been given to mankind down through the ages that we just know there is a balancing point on certain things. Take the idea of justice. What is just? What is just? It's balance. It's harmony. There's certain things that we don't have to be told or read in a book. It's a knowing that we know within us. It's a feeling deep down. Those had to come from somewhere. And it says those are from great sages and individuals who have, in previous lifetimes and previous periods of evolution, have gone through this state we're going through now and have learned that pure harmony, that pure balance, that oneness that's within all of us. So that gives us an idea to think about, too. These innate ideas, where did they come from? Nobody gave them to us.
Yes.
So, practically speaking, that individuality lives, is present we're just not aware of it. And that the question is therefore, what do we do, or what can we do, to become aware of that higher self, or that higher life? Is there a something you mentioned in Gita? Can you give us an idea of what path we have to follow to become aware of that higher self?
Well, we have to follow the dictates of the soul to make ourselves porous. And we have in the Ocean of Theosophy, it says, by living according to the dictates of the soul, the brain may at last become porous to the soul's recollections. So it's by living by one's conscience, following one's conscience, and through altruism. That's one way. Yeah, yes?
Well, it says in Gita that it's through action.
Oh, so you already know the answer. Okay.
Well, no, I have another question. Okay. I know the question, but I'm not sure I know the answer.
Through the Gita, it says?
Well, it says about, through action that we are liberated. So, I mean, we all have to act.
We are constantly acting.
So there has to be a method by which we act that we won't be tied down to all these actions that we perform.
Well, if we're acting for the good of all concerned, then we know we're acting the right way.
Or how about the idea of becoming an observer, which we are in a way, but becoming an observer of what we're doing, what we're saying, what we're thinking, because we know actions come from thoughts first. So maybe start being more aware of how we interact with other people. Try to think before we do. For most of us, it's always, gosh, I should have said, or I wish I would have done. We can, with training, learn to think more before we act. Way in the back.
One of the most practical methods is to, how would someone I admire or value or appreciate act in this situation? I may want to act for the good of all, but I don't know what that is. I'm here and now, but I can decide, I have a friend who's very calm and wise, and I think I know how they would respond. I can begin acting like that and then see how I feel about it, and what I'm going to feel is good. Mm-hmm. And when you feel good, you do it again.
Right, and that's with happiness. If we strive for happiness, we're never going to reach it. We have to strive to do the right thing. And eventually, by doing our duty, we become happy. We become happy just because we're not living for happiness. Happiness comes to us. Mm-hmm. We're not living for it. Yes?
I just want to make sure that I understand everything correctly. When we speak about the individuality, we speak about our inner man in the thinker, and when we speak about personality, we think about the shell, like, what we actually do is like playing the song from different players, because you will hear different sounds on each and every player. You could have different settings on different players, and you could have different equalizers, so basically the same song will sound different on the, but the song itself is still the individual, like still the same.
Yeah, it's like the actor going through different parts in different plays, same idea with the idea of different sounds, different music.
All the way in the back.
Yes. In regards to the last couple comments, questions that were made, the whole idea with the soul being in a form is for evolution. So, in the after-death state of Devakan, there's that assimilation of all the higher aspirations, which the individuality is assimilating this. So when birth happens, isn't the goal then to transmute that personality into the higher?
Well, we have to understand that devachanic state is strictly of the personal life just lived. It's one of those pearls on the string of many. So it's that clearing up, that letting go, that cleansing of the highest aspirations that one had but could not physically express them in this life, past lifetime. If we just maybe sometimes think maybe of the observer, to become the observer is to be more in tune with that full reality of what we really are. Is that with this?
Yeah. But that assimilation in Devachan, isn't that the higher nature assimilating those higher aspirations? Because at
I see what you're saying.
Well,
now,
the personality is it's still a very personal, it's intensely personal. Devachan, we get all our, we get compensation in a sense for everything that we missed out on and all of the high idealistic thoughts. But see, that's a trap too, because if we live our whole lives wishing to do this, that, and the other and not acting on it, then we're going to have a long period in Devachan, which will be out of incarnation and not able to help our fellows. So that's why we should always be acting. When we, Mr. Judge says, you know, when you get an altruistic thought, act on it. Don't let it pass. Act on it. Yes?
We have often heard the term the United States of America. All for one and one for all. And that ever since then, at least in this side of the Atlantic Ocean, they're trying to make that a reality. All for one, one for all. Can we see any connection between those statements and our talk on individuality and personality?
Well, you sort of left out the Three Musketeers. They had it much earlier, all for one and one for all. Wouldn't you think that term, what that meant, what it is, that you're all, we're all fellows, shall we say, together? I would think that a statement of like that is an opening for that feeling of knowing that we are all one together.
Yes.
Yeah. Our person's proclivities.
Could you speak just a little louder, please?
Are a person's proclivities a characteristic of their personality or their individuality?
Are person's proclivities an example of one's personality or individuality? That's an excellent question. We think, do we want to get some comments on that?
Well, we could also say, in a way, both. How did they come about? It wouldn't have come about unless it could have been expressed on some level of through action. So when we say that's a good way of looking at an individual, is look at their character. Where is that strength, or where is that height of knowing within? It's that's part of that knowing within.
And is it a proclivity to do good, or is it a quirk? Something that's, in a sense, proclivity can be a tendency or a quirk that may not be positive. So it could be either.
Well, I sometimes think sometimes it can be of a positive nature. Way in the back.
Sure.
The comment about all for one, one for all, we think is a way of expressing what is our motive that lies at the very heart of why we're doing what we're doing. We start, in a sense, we start out selfish. Our proclivities are, I want this, I'm really good at that, I'll have some more of that. And little by little, we become aware of the world around us, and we become a little bit less selfish. So we are starting to recognize the all-in-one, the one-in-all. And the highest expression of that, with the best altruistic motive, would be to use the talents and faculties we have to work for all, and not necessarily to think anything at all of what's in it for me or why should I do this, but be moved to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And it's also the expression of do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
That is definitely right. The golden rule. And it's the other, we could say, is human nature. Look out for number one, me. That's what they usually figure out is look out for myself. This is when we take that broader scope, look out for all.
It's only the personality that suffers, that has anxiety, that frets and worries and is concerned with the affairs of the day. The individuality is beyond that. It does not suffer.
I keep on imagining that this higher self, the words and the thoughts, thought, word, and deed, it points to the fact that we are gods in potential, only because we don't use the highest thoughts. We're stuck here. And so therefore, don't we impress every thought, word, and deed that we have in this plane, and that when we come back again, we're like a magnet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Draw to ourselves all of those things that we have impressed. So with this idea of proclivities, you mentioned that we're making choice. So we're doing that now, and we're making choices now.
There's been a hand up in the... No, actually behind you. This lady? Yes.
It seems to me that the whole goal, as we've been talking about, the goal of spiritual evolution is this oneness, and that we have to go through this long series of incarnations and trials and tribulations and to gain the experiences to when we reach the end, when we reach that goal, that we have all these experiences that other people have had, and we embrace it, whereas at the beginning of the evolution, we're sort of, one God with everything, and we don't have this differentiation of various experiences. So it's the experiences that we gain which bring us to the spiritual goal of ultimate oneness.
Hmm. In the back?
Could we just clarify for a second, though, that the higher self is not experiencing here. The higher self is universal. It's the same in all and in everything, in the atom as much as in the human. The individuality, the self-conscious thinker, does feel, does suffer, does choose. It is using the higher as the power to do all that, but it is individual. An example is, whatever the personality, you could have in your individual nature the memory and feeling of mistreatment in childhood, and that will color and affect every experience of that individual life. But the individuality didn't cause it in this life. It's a karma. It's something from the past. And until we, as humanity, come to understand everything that comes to me is mine, good, bad, or indifferent, we will never get out of this mess that we're making as personalities. But the individual does suffer. And in that suffering, that's when it starts to grow up and change the causes it sets up.
You know, what makes me think of that, I booed, wept with all my brothers, with all my tears. Yeah.
This gentleman has his hand up.
Earlier, striving for happiness was mentioned. And when I hear happiness, I can't help but thinking that I use that interchangeably with joy or love. And it's reminded me of a tool that I grew fond of that states that your task is not to seek and find love, instead to seek and find all the barriers you've built against it.
Ooh, nice.
Thank you for the comment. Yes.
So, from my readings of other things, it talks about that once you reach the state of perfection, everything disappears. So there's no perfected being that lives on for eternity. Everything that has been experienced gets erased on an individual level. So once you attain enlightenment, there's no perfected being that lives forever. Everything that you have experienced goes back to the source. So well, this whole idea of...
The masters, though, and the philosophy, the masters are perfected beings. They have mastered all. And they voluntarily choose to reincarnate. There's a choice. You can separate yourself. You can go into nirvana. You can drop out of the stream of evolution. And you've earned it. It is a choice. It's an earned choice. But those elder brothers and those great souls are those that have chosen the path of woe rather than the path of liberation.
And to help younger brothers, shall we say, because they have the knowledge. They're there. That's how you find these teachings.
Okay.
On the back of the dollar bill, it says, E pluribus unum. What does that mean?
One for all.
One out of many.
One out of many.
Well, one out of many. Okay.
Yeah.
One out of many. That's correct. I stand corrected.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we were wondering on the previous comment about the perfectibility. Yes, a master represents a certain degree of perfection, but that's only in regard to this period of evolution. And there could be, and there is taught, the idea where there's a universal dissolution and a disappearance of all manifested things, but then there's a new cycle. And even that great soul has an opportunity to develop a higher degree of perfection relative to that time.
Right. There's no ultimate perfection. It's always a becoming. In the back?
We've always thought if somebody gave you a pill that gave you wisdom about everything, there was nothing left to know, how many days before you'd go, well, isn't there anything else?
Is that all
there is? We are knowers. We're born to know. We always have to have something in front of us to head towards.
You had your hand up.
You spoke about fundamental causes towards spiritual evolution, meaning that there's a fundamental good versus bad, altruism, the higher nature of deeds and actions of a human being. Where are those written? Where are those stated? Where is the instruction book for these what's good and altruistic to you, maybe not so to Hitler? Yeah.
The instruction books would be the voice of the silence, light on the path.
I refer to humanity, not to you and me. I mean, I came across this by chance. How is it that
human evolution is meant
to evolve in darkness?
Well, you didn't come across it by chance. Well, there's really no coincidences.
I'm fortunate to have come across it, but 7.9 billion people have not.
Well, but it's
once we all try to justify everything what we do, and that justification would be from what we know what is good.
Karmically, when the time comes, the time will be there. For all, we're not all on the same gister. We're not all at the same speed. There's one path, but there's many different ways to approach it. So if you just think karmically, the time has come for you. Now, whether you can understand it and balance it, that's up to you.
Now, in closing, this is a quote from Robert Crosby from Universal Theosophy, and this hopefully will tie it all together. If then we will think of ourselves as eternal, invisible beings, acting through visible, impermanent instruments, we shall get a better and truer conception of life. And if we will try to reach inward to this innermost part of our heart of hearts, we shall find a greater vision, ours, a power to perceive in wider ranges, to greater depths, with more effect than can ever be gained beyond our physical organs of sight. Our meeting is adjourned.
Right. And you just take it.
You know, it's easiest thing to do
is what?
It's just what I do.
Is this, I think it's.